We're making the case today for why e-textbooks make sense to everybody, not just the authors and the publishers, but also the students and the teachers in the universities. This is Chris Keneally for Beyond the Book, and joining me on the line are the authors of very interesting opinion column that appeared in Publishers Weekly in November called Why E-Textbooks Just Make Sense. With us from Florida is Richard Hull. He's Executive Director of the Text and Academic Authors Association. And welcome to Beyond the Book, Richard.
Well, thanks, Chris. I appreciate it very much being asked to be on.
Well, it's a pleasure to have you join us. And also on the line from San Diego, California, is Michael Lenny. Michael is an author's attorney and president of the Lenny Literary Agency. Michael, welcome to Beyond the Book.
Thank you, Chris. Good to be here.
Well, let's get started and kind of run through this very interesting opinion column from Publishers Weekly. And Richard, you know, your perspective is, of course, as executive director of the Text and Academic Authors Association, a group that, you know, is known well to our Beyond the Book audiences. We occasionally carry some of your programs, and I enjoy appearing at the conference. And you are not only the executive director for TAA, but you also have a previous lifetime as a professor and an author yourself. So tee this all up for people who might not be familiar or who remember textbooks from, you know, their college days so long ago. What's the situation today?
Well, thanks, Chris. It's a very interesting situation. We've been caught in a spiral of increasing textbook costs, and I've spent a fair amount of time thinking and analyzing and reading about the phenomenon and trying to figure out just what the key elements are. In my day as a student, students bought their textbooks and they put them on the shelf and they used them throughout their education and on into their professional life. I have most of the textbooks I ever purchased as an undergraduate and all that I purchased as a graduate student still in my library. The practice more recently, however, has changed. That is the practice of students. Students typically buy a textbook, use it for a semester or a year, and then sell it either back to the bookstore or some other used book seller. And that individual then resells that textbook to another student who uses it and resells it back to the reseller at a considerable loss, of course. And the reseller continues to market that same copy of the textbook for as many as five or six semesters, or even more if you're including summer semesters. Each of those sales by the used textbook seller is a non-sale of an original copy, so that over the course of a let's say six semesters, one textbook is used six times rather than six textbooks each being purchased one time. And that represents a terrific decline in the return to the both the book publisher and the author of the textbook through royalties. The book publisher is in turn forced to bring out a new edition of the textbook, perhaps well before advances in the field would have dictated that a new textbook is appropriate, and has to price it probably higher than the previous one in order to recover the costs that have not been recovered with the sale of the previous textbook. So you have a kind of spiraling increase in cost and in some respects, a shortening of the period of time that a given issue is available.
So all of that, Richard, is driving the cost of textbooks to the individual student higher and higher all the time.
That's right. That's right. Those are the key factors. There are some others, but those are the key ones.
Right, because this is, after all, a business for everybody involved, and they're looking to get what they can. But if they can't get it on the resale, they have to get it in that first sale.
That's correct. And there's another phenomenon that's even more invidious and insidious. Comp copies or examination copies that are sent to faculty, often at their request, are prized by textbook resellers because they can buy them for even less than the used ones that, from students, and they can turn around and resell those having very little investment in them. That copy has never been sold by the publisher. It has been, if you will, loaned by the publisher in the hopes to induce a faculty member to adopt it for his or her course, but the faculty member typically does not return it to the publisher when it's not used, but provides it, regards it as a source of income.
Right.
A number of states have tried to deal with that problem by outlawing the sale of comp copies by state employees, faculty members in state colleges and universities. Some states just flat outlawed. Others say you can't resell a copy that is marked not for resale. But we have seen used booksellers even acquire those copies and put black tape over the not for resale and put them on the market. So there's quite a bit of a very unfair practice going on.
Well, you know, we are all aware that people have been concerned about the high price of textbooks for a long time. Even Congress has tried to get into the act. And what you're saying in this piece for PW back in November is that the arrival of e-textbooks is going to change all of this for the better for everybody. Tell us why.
Well, the e-textbook, unlike the print textbook, is dependent upon a particular reader, either a computer, a laptop computer, or an iPad or a Kindle or one of the other electronic book readers. And the way that they are structured, a copy that's downloaded to the reader or to the laptop is modified so that it can be opened only on that particular reader or that particular laptop. So, and there's various ways in which that can be done. But the result of that is that the ebook, whether it's a trade book or a textbook, cannot be sold and transferred to another reader or another computer. That means that the that decreasing sale from the first sale being reused five more times by the used bookseller with no return to the publisher. Each time that book is purchased, it's purchased from the publisher or the publisher's distributor and is not resold by the student or whoever else is reading it. So rather than having one copy be used six times with five of those sales not benefiting either publisher or author, one copy is sold once, and it benefits that reader, and then the next person who wants that has to buy another copy. There's a modification of it that even makes it possible to lease a copy, and that would mean that you download it for, let's say, 3 or 4 months, and then it, in effect, erases itself from your computer or your reader.
Well, it's all pretty interesting, and we want to bring Michael Lenny in here to add his perspective as someone who's had quite a lot of experience representing textbook authors over the years. And Michael, what do you think about the arrival of e-textbooks and what it could potentially mean for authors?
As most people know, the relationship between authors and publishers in college textbook publishing is 85-15. So in other words, everything that affects the publisher and allows the publisher to get 85% more revenue puts 15% more to the author. So it's a parallel track. It strikes me as it's having a lot to say about fairness. Right now, by rough estimate, the used book market is taking 50% of the profits from the labors of the author and the publisher. And to the extent that can be lessened, that's good news for the author. We got one comment that was adverse. and I just read it to you because it's kind of a takeoff point for discussion. The reader says, apparently Hall and Lenny have never heard of the first sale doctrine or capitalism. If the used book industry can take away 50% of publishers' market share, then maybe the publishers need to be more competitive. Well, my response to that is back at you. We are being more competitive, and now it's your turn to deal with that. We're putting out an electronic product that is attractive, has interactive parts, and it sells cheaper. And if that means that there won't be as many sales by used book dealers without royalties to authors, then so be it.
You're not going to lose any sleep over that. And, you know, I'm not.
I'm pretty comfortable with that one.
Right. Well, you know, and a lot of people may be joining you in that. We're talking with Richard Hull, Executive Director of the Texan Academic Authors Association, and Michael Lenny, who's been on the TAA Council for many years and is president of the Lenny Literary Agency, about an essay they had in Publishers Weekly in November about the virtues of e-textbooks, and from many different angles. And one of them, Richard, to sort of make sure that this isn't just about what it means to the pocketbooks or the wallets of publishers and authors, but what it means to students and their instructors. You had several guests at the most recent conference from new types of e-textbook publishers that are going to change what people think textbooks really are. There was Flat World Knowledge there and Dynamic Books, and they've got a business model and a textbook publishing model that isn't simply pouring the text into the online world. It's doing much more than that.
Yes, many people think that the e-book is just simply a snapshot or a PDF file of the physical book. And the ebook has many, many more possible functions. I have a textbook that I have published as an ebook, and it has in it embedded links to various sites on the internet. So you can, if you want a little more information about a particular term or concept, you can simply click on it, and you're immediately taken to one of several sites on the internet that explains it more fully, may illustrate it, and so forth. Other textbook producers are embedding video clips in their textbooks so that when you read about a particular battle, let's say, you actually have a video clip of a reproduction of that battle, or if it's one that's occurred in recent times, actual footage of the battle. Similar sorts of things for an anthropology text. You visit a tribe in the Amazon, and you have a video clip that illustrates some of the tribe's practices and rituals.
Or the way I like to think of it, Richard, is if it's a medical textbook, you know, you can go from the disgusting description of the disease to a disgusting video of the disease.
That's right. That's correct. And the other great advantage I would see is, particularly for students who are in the sciences and they have textbooks that weigh 10 or 15 pounds each, a backpack full of those is quite a burden to carry around. And if you can get the same textbooks in a 1 or 2 pound reader with color, with the ability to annotate, to highlight, to underline, to make notes, you have all of the advantages of the physical book, even the appearance of page turning as you swipe your finger across the page. You can expand the view of a particular passage or image if you want a closer look, simply by spreading your fingers on the at least on the iPad. And it is so much more interactive that I think it has enormous advantages in the classroom. The other thing is the you mentioned, what was it, Flat World, and who was the other one?
And Dynamic Books.
Dynamic Books. Dynamic Books have the model where the professor can add material to the textbooks being used in his or her class, and the students can even add material just for the use within the class itself. So it creates a learning community around a given textbook that is interactive, that involves the insights and contributions of that small learning community. And I think that is an extremely exciting educational development.
Well, it is an exciting development, and looking forward to seeing it sort of play out in the world. And you know, it's important for us here at Copyright Clearance Centers Beyond the Book to follow all this. And we've been following the ebook world, but now we've kind of added a nuance here with e-textbooks. And I wonder, finally, Michael, Lenny, what this all may mean to authors and their contracts. Any things that you would sort of make them aware of or to be thinking about? I know digital rights have been an issue for many years. What's going to change as e-textbooks become more the norm, do you think?
Well, I think textbook authors in general have always been hesitant to be business people for their own interests, and they I joke it sometimes when I give talks about the contracts that they're signed by authors you know, with all the introspection of signing a hotel register. So they need to look a little harder at their contracts, particularly with regard to new media and with regard to electronic rights, which is the current new media, and negotiate a fair deal for themselves. The publishers are not going to give away all of the additional profits that they can make by not having paper costs, distribution costs, storage costs, all that sort of thing. The authors have to negotiate hard for their share, their proper share of that. Some publishers that go so far as to offer in their original contracts a royalty rate less than the print rate for any text, and that's outrageous, really. But you know, if they can get it, they're going to get it. So authors have to stand up for their rights in that regard and negotiate a substantially higher royalty rate for e-rights than for print rights. So that's my primary recommendation.
Right, and that seems an important message, Michael, that for authors of all kinds, but particularly in this world of the textbook publishing community, keeping an eye on the business side of things is important. Understanding the direction the business is going is going to allow you to go into that negotiations prepared. And I think that's a great way to end this piece. We have been chatting today on Beyond the Book with Richard Hull, who is Executive Director of the Text and Academic Authors Association. Richard, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you for inviting me. I've enjoyed it very much.
And likewise, we've enjoyed chatting with Michael Lenny. Michael is an author's attorney and president of the Lenny Literary Agency in San Diego. Michael, it's nice to have you on Beyond the Book.
Thanks, Chris. I've enjoyed the exchange.
And for all of us at Copyright Clearance Center, this is Chris Keneally wishing you a great day.